Hello and welcome back to the Hulkcast. As usual, I'm your host, James Rushton. Over there is Daniel Raza. We're speaking about the latest and greatest in Aston Villa, well, in the world of Aston Villa right now. And we've just come off the back of, a magnificent win over Derby County. Danny, take us through that. Take us through that step by step, if you won't mind.
Hello, how's it going?
Sorry, I forgot. Like, how are you?
That's all right, don't worry about it. It's all good. Yeah, it was a good game. I think obviously the first half threw up a couple of things which perhaps were negatives, but on the whole, I think we played really well. I'm going to put my hands up straight away. I predicted on the podcast last week that we would lose 2-0. I thought that Derby's midfield would outplay us, but in fact, on the contrary, we actually had a very dominant performance from the midfield. John McGinn absolutely pitbulling the Derby County midfield throughout the whole game. And of course, three quick goals within 11 minutes to shut the game down in the last few minutes of the game.
Dude, they got the football rammed down them. And what I will say is I think we all predicted that it would be... we all predicted a loss. I think me, you, Phil.
No, Phil, I'm pretty sure Phil predicted a win.
Even then, I think he usually predicts a 4-0 win, so him predicting a 2-1. No, I'm being honest. He's very optimistic. So him predicting a 2-1, it may as well have been a loss. So for him, in his terms. But, I went to Derby courtesy of the charity of Hulkcast listener Dave Farris. I think a lot of you will know Dave. He's very popular in Villa circles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not just for liking Villa, but because he loves Birmingham's. The city of Birmingham. I almost said Birmingham City. He doesn't love Birmingham City as in the football club.
But Birmingham as in the city. Birmingham
yeah, and I think city. We can all get down with that. I think Birmingham is a great place. And he appreciates that. And he comes from Cincinnati. And he took me. Well, I say took. I had to buy his train tickets and a few beers. So I think the cost even out. But he took me to the Derby County match. And I met a lot of people. I saw loads of faces that I recognised off Twitter that I was a bit too nervous about going up and approaching, because that's just me.
Where did you notice them,
dude? I just saw, like, in the pub, like before the match, I just saw loads of faces and I was like, I've seen those faces, so oh, many really? Of them.
Do you know, like, I've only ever experienced it once, where like I've been in snobs and a couple of guys from Twitter were like, yo, we follow you on Twitter. I was like,
I'm telling you, if you go to a Villa away game. And, you know, it's not too far away.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say that, but I think you'll have the London circles going to the London games and the South games. But if you go to one in the Midlands, I think you stand a chance of seeing at least 9 or 10 people.
Oh, and we went to
Fulham. Especially based on your old account, mate.
Oh, well, yeah, the one that... technically exists. technically exists, but yeah, of course. But no, I'm sure, like, you know, most of the people I actively interacted with and like actively interacted with me on Twitter are still, you know, on my current account. And I think that's the thing with Villa fans. I think we are quite a good community. I think we all do stick with each other quite well. I don't ever sense a lot of animosity between us as a group. So it's nice to see you bumped into a few people there, James.
Yeah, I've met Harry and his partner Lou, who went down the Villa. A bloke called Af. He says he recognised my voice off the podcast.
Oh, that's so crazy.
Hi, Af. I didn't speak to him for the rest of that. Hi, Af. He just come to get the ticket, and he was at the end of our queue. I got a really good photo of him because a smoke bomb went off. A pyro went off.
Oh, yeah.
After we scored our first goal, it went off directly next to him, like over him.
That's crazy.
Harry and his partner Lou, Stevie Green, of course, formerly host of the Villa View, his own little football things here and there, and of course Dave Forrest, who took us all down there. You know, fantastic guy, and man, it couldn't have been a better game. 3-0, and we were dominating. And like, let's not say Derby played terribly because they had chances. They didn't take those chances, and man, Villa was so good. I think you can't state enough how good Villa were, and there was a bit. I said to you before we come on, the negatives, it was like Jonathan Codger was a 6 out of 10 and Conor Hourihan knocked a few long balls wide. That's it.
We've got to mention that one defensive error of Tanzibi basically getting pushed off. James Chester did obviously, like, you know, block the shot off from going on to the goal. But that's part and parcel. Happens. That was probably my only criticism.
Yeah, I think like it's a straight street fight at the back between two people, and you know you can't win all of them. So I don't know. Would I class it as an error? I mean, you're entitled to say that, mate. I'm not disagreeing. And you know what? Axel Tuanzebe, how good was he?
Yeah, generally, he was great. I love that we've got him at centre back.
Dude, he's so good. You could argue he's, if not as good as, better than James Chester on occasions.
You could argue that he's as good as, if not better than Chris Smalling. So like Jose Mourinho, this is me giving you some advice right now. When Axel Tanzibi comes back from Aston Villa, don't throw him to the wayline. Because
don't sell him back to us. You keep him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, there's an aging defense over there at United, and like fans aren't incredibly happy with, you know, performances of guys like Bailly and Lindelof, who, you know, with all respect to them, are fantastic centre backs. It's just the Man United effect, which does pop up every now and then. But like, you know, when you've got the likes of Chris Smalling almost on their way out from the top level, they have to start, you know, looking at guys like Tanzebe and thinking, right, this guy is bloody good.
Yeah, Tuanzebe, wow. He's come a long way. And I guess a part of that, he didn't look bad at right back. We have to say that playing him at right back wasn't the worst decision, but ignoring him at centre back maybe was. He's so good. And he's getting that. And that, his chant is amazing. The chant that Villa fans have about him. Man.
Do it.
I'm not doing it.
Well, I don't know the chant.
You don't know the chant? You know that song? You might not know the song. It's Lip Up Fatty.
Oh, yeah. I know the song.
Oh, it's so good. It's one of the best chants. It's so good. It's so fun. And, you know, a lot of people don't like some chants because they're swearing, that's fair enough, or that they're, like, kind of, I wouldn't say offensive.
Like the classic just, like Bonhoeffer one.
Yeah, some of it obscene, you know, and some people can't really get down with that, and that's fair enough. The Tuanzebe chant is one that's completely made out of fun. It's fun.
I prefer those kinds of chants, to be honest.
I'll get you a clip because I don't really want to do it because I've been humming it all day and I keep getting it wrong. So I'll get it wrong. I know I'll get it wrong now because it's in my head wrong. But Derby, mate, 3-0. I don't know who scored the second goal still. I think it was Tammy Abraham.
It was Tammy Abraham. It was a fantastic cross from John McGinn. Yeah.
Yeah, and McGinn was on the end of the first one from Bolasie.
That's correct.
Yeah. Conor Hourihan. Third goal, he didn't even have his best game. As I said, you could say it was the weakest part. You got to have him on the pitch just to do that.
You know what? We're so lucky to have Hourihan as well. That's the thing. Like, he's ridiculously good. You know, and he still gets picked for Ireland, obviously. And he's one of those players that you have to say, not a lot of people know about him outside of the top division. Sorry, within the top division even. Sorry.
It's people who really like their football. Like across, you know, regardless of club, who know about Conor Hourihan. He's probably one of the better set piece takers in world football. I would go that far.
Absolutely. I mean, he's got a bit of Harry Arter syndrome. I'm not going to lie. You know, like Harry Arter was ridiculously good in the Championship. And as soon as he went up to the Premier League, you know, you don't actually hear about him, even though, you know, he's still putting good performances and whatnot. That's who I'd compare Conor Hourihan to. And I feel like even if we did go up to the Premier League, right, I think there'd be a lot of fans who'd be thinking, wait, who are these guys?
Yeah, even if it was like Sunday League, though, you'd have him there just because he can do the damage on the set piece.
I think he's solid, mate. Honestly, I'm not going to lie.
I've done him a massive injustice there, mate. A massive injustice. No, he's genuinely good. He's maybe not as good as Bjarnason at defensive midfield or even Whelan, you know, but he's all right. You need him on the pitch just for the set piece.
No, but he's your out-and-out central midfielder, though, isn't he? He is your straight-up central midfielder. I'd say almost in the Gareth Barry mould, you know?
Getting there, definitely.
No, I wouldn't say he's as good as Gareth Barry was, but what I'm saying is he's in that sort of mould, isn't he? He is your out-and-out central midfielder. I'd say the same with John McGinn as well. They're both very similar in that sense, although John McGinn's more of a pit bull. But
yeah, John McGinn was further forward than almost anyone against Derby. I can't believe how far he got up the pitch.
No, he was just running all over the place.
Further than Grealish, and that's mad.
I'd be interested to know his running statistics, actually. I'm not going to lie.
For someone who eats so much beans on toast, he covers some distance.
Beans on toast.
Dude, he eats beans on toast. If you ever see a picture of, you know, the Villa canteen when they're taking their Instagram stories, you can see him in the background eating fucking poached egg and beans on toast.
That is the next level of analysis right there, James. I've never analysed the player's meal coming into...
You have to. This is 2019, mate.
Right. I'm actually gonna check out how much John McGinn ran. I'm not going to lie. I feel like... I'm looking at his heat map right now. His heat map is all over the place. It's genuinely all over the place. I mean, Grealish is even more all over the place, but yeah.
I think John McGinn and Jack Grealish are very similar players, and one of them looks like he makes it... John McGinn's like a wrecking ball, and Jack Grealish is very much ballet, but they do the same thing. They do exactly the same thing. And that's they win the ball, they get forward, and they are destructive in the face of goal with its key passes, taking shots, or getting in the box. But John McGinn is so thunderous in the way he plays.
Yeah.
Like, he has impact. And I think that benefits him a lot, because what Jack Grealish does, he's very quiet and dainty. And that's not me saying he's weak. He's very strong. He's monstrous, Jack Grealish. He's muscly. But John McGinn has so much more like physical impact just in his animation almost.
Yeah,
like,
no.
The way he just moves.
I agree. I don't know. I don't know how to describe him or who to compare him to.
They do exactly the same thing. Like, what they do on the pitch is exactly the same.
Do you think so?
It's just the method. It's just the method. It's just how it looks. John McGinn is so much more physically animated than Jack Grealish, and the end product is almost the same.
I do think Grealish
is a lot
of
similar stuff.
Elegant though. In his running.
That's exactly what I'm saying. They do the same stuff. And Jack Grealish, it's like a fine craft. And John McGinn, it's so physical. But it's the same. And like, if you look very closely, you'll see like that their role on the pitch is almost exactly the same. They switch. And, you know, I think who said that John McGinn, there's some Scottish manager said John McGinn was like 10 times better than Jack Grealish. And I laughed that off. But, like, he has some kind of a point. Whoever made that has a kind of a point there.
Oh, I get it. John McGinn is far more developed.
Really good.
I tell you what, that's how you want John McGinn to turn out, I guess, in a few years' time.
Yeah, I think they'll grow apart, Grealish and McGinn, on the pitch. But right now, it's just like you've got two incredible players doing the same thing to incredible success.
I would argue that John McGinn is far more comfortable deeper. Down, you know, deeper
absolutely.
In the field. You know, Jack, I think Grealish is a lot more sort of, he is the one you want to kind of try and dribble past the defenders, whereas I'd say John McGinn is the one who, you know, you really want collecting the ball. I wouldn't trust Jack Grealish when it comes to winning the ball back necessarily.
I feel like an arty way of describing this would be that McGinn thrives somewhat in chaos, whereas Jack Grealish, it's like very composed. It's almost like everything's come out to plan with Grealish. McGinn seems to thrive when everything is going wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like the plans collapse and he kind of... What is the word? Oh, I forgot the word. It's a really simple word.
You want to say that again?
It's a really simple word, mate, and I forgot it.
Oh. Right, okay.
It begins with an I. I've just gone blank.
I'm not helping you.
I've just gone completely. It's a simple word. It's a really simple word. But I've gone completely blank. And I don't know. It's gone. But no, he makes it up on the fly.
World class analysis.
Yeah. I forgot the word. I've genuinely forgot. Wait, it's like a primary school word.
Who's making it up on the fly?
John McGinn.
Are you sure you're talking about John McGinn and not yourself?
You've been saying that all for a while, haven't you?
No, you're right. Absolutely. I think John McGinn is an incredibly sort of it does almost look like he's got some sort of an instinct about him. He doesn't seem to have any sort of planning behind his ways, I guess. But I like that, you know. I think we've been missing that in a player for a while, because I don't think we have any other player, perhaps bar somebody like Mile Jedinak, who can really act on that instinct and win that ball back in an instant. And none of our other midfielders are necessarily like that. And it's good to see that. It's almost like John McGinn's got this sort of look in his eyes where he just sort of comes to life. And that's what we've been seeing from him recently. And ever since he signed, really, an absolutely fantastic signing from Steve Bruce. And it's glad to see that positive mark staying with him.
Yeah, I'm so upset I forgot that word, mate. It's like one word. Perfect. For describing it, it's gone. It's completely
gone.
It's lost. I'm gutted.
Don't worry about it.
But no, Derby, fantastic, mate. And I think we'll preview Blues next week. But I am so glad. So glad that result proved us all wrong. We were predicting losses. And wow, that was some start. They're a good team, Derby. Like Frank Lampard's Derby, sorry, dare I say. They're meant to be like... They are one of the better teams in the league, and I know they lacked Mason Mount and they weren't on form. But for Villa to go to Pride Park, win 3-0 and play in that way, I've never seen them play that way in an away game against, quote-unquote, stronger opposition.
Yeah.
So I'm so proud. I really am. And I think I said to you off air, probably my top three Villa games of all time, genuinely, that I've been to.
Why is it in your top three?
A, the people. And I'm not slagging off my family who I go to every game with, but it was a nice difference. B, the fact that I wasn't expecting it. And C, just the entire situation. It was like perfection, honestly. For me, it was just like perfection. It was just like, it was never not, like Villa were never not going to win 3-0, almost. Like it was completely planned out from the start.
Do you know what? It's just great to see that, though. You know, it's been a while, and I think it's worth saying that it has been a while since we've turned up at a game. And I'd say I'd draw comparisons to the Wolves game last year, where the other team are in such good form, and we've gone and ruined their party. Because that is not something that I have been used to at all.
Almost, I'd say it goes one further, because you've ruined their party on their ground. 37,000 of them, mate. Didn't hear them once. There was 3,000 of us.
Oh, really?
37, wow. 27,
Were Derby awful?
They weren't even bad. They just did, it wasn't their best game. But they gave us a fight for about 60 minutes. And that's good enough, mate.
Here's one for you as well. Do you see, and obviously, you know, you look at that midfield, there's some very good players in there. What do you see in terms of Frank Lampard's influence from that side? Did you see any of Frank Lampard in terms of almost created in his image in that Derby County team?
Yeah, because they seem to actually think, you know, they seem to be a football team like Villa that think. I just think Villa gave him too much of a game. It was just too much chaos for him. Villa were just battering him.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Run him over. Complete. Like, if you're the home team, I don't think you often expect the away team to come up and like dominate. You expect them, you know, they'll attack on a break, they'll counter. I don't think they expected Villa to sit with a high line and try and literally pin them back.
Oh, that's the other great thing, isn't it? Playing with a high line, that's something...
That's dangerous. Something that is dangerous to do away from home, don't get me wrong, but it worked for once.
Yeah, but that's because what I was saying a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, that's because Dean Smith knows that he hasn't got any other choice. I'm not saying that our starting defence is bad, but, you know, we need to almost implement it because, you know what, like, we don't have reinforcements there. So we'd be way better off focusing on the attacking side of our game and utilising that than, you know, settling for a system where we are going to have to defend most of the time. And, you know, that's the smart thing from Dean Smith.
Yeah, I definitely agree, mate. I think it's such a positive result that's got me feeling so good. What I will say about the defence is I know Villa looked in trouble at times, and Nyland stepped up with a really good save at like 2 points in the game to keep Villa in it. What I will say about the defence is how composed and calm they looked all the time. You know, like we were saying, when James Chester cleared off the line against Bolton, it wasn't really that last gasp or that heroic because he always knew what was happening, was always in control.
Yeah.
That's what Villa were like the whole game. Like, it never seemed out of their hands to defend, even in the box, right in front of goal. Never.
Okay, I hear that. Yeah.
And that's just incredible to think how far they've come in a few weeks at the back.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's just, you know, how we were saying about, you know, Dean Smith and how the first few games he had were tough, and essentially how, you know, we knew that eventually he'd get it right. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got Thierry Henry losing again over at PSG. And, you know, we wouldn't know, you know, who knows how that would have turned out. But it's just good now for us Villa fans to see that, look, we were right to trust Dean Smith. And, you know, hopefully this stays up. You know, hopefully this does carry on. But, you know, I almost think back to last season. You know, we need to be up there by the end of this season. We really do. You know, do you remember the mad run of wins that we went on last season? The mad run of, you know, being undefeated? We need to think about whether or not Dean Smith can deliver that. And on this basis, beating Derby 3-0, there is definitely the possibility of that. And we almost need to go on that sort of run of form because Norwich are running away with the title at the moment.
Yeah, still early days. And I think poor Thierry Henry, mate, at the Monégasque over in Monaco. 4-0 against PSG. Expected, mate. PSG are great. You know, dynamite. Galacticos.
Yeah, you know what? Don't care.
You'd think Monaco could put up a damn fight. But I feel sorry. I feel for him. I think he took the job that he was closer to. He was former Monaco man. Monaco fan favourite. And it's went wrong.
He shouldn't have done it. He should not have done it from the start. You know.
And he shouldn't have took the Villa job either.
Well,
I guarantee you.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that he's not ready, or it's not that he's a poor manager or whatever. It's just that, like, you know, there's just some jobs you don't take.
It's like Gary Neville at Valencia. Why would you take that job?
Exactly. David Moyes at Sociedad. You know, again.
Why? Chris Coleman at the same. I think he was at the same club. Why?
David Moyes at Sunderland.
Why? David Moyes at West Ham.
David Moyes at.
David Moyes at Man United.
Just taking the wrong job, mate. Yeah, you know, it's just one of those things, isn't it? Tell you what, one I can understand. Paul Lambert at Ipswich.
That's a very good fit.
I think so too.
I think he'll do very well there.
Yeah, same, genuinely.
Up to a point. I think this season might go better for him. I think Lambert will do well. It's just when it all kind of flattens out and becomes like average, then he's going to struggle.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
If he's given a bit of money, I think he'll do really well there, but I don't see it happening. Ipswich ain't got, you know, it's Ipswich.
If there's one thing about Paul Lambert, right? I obviously put in a lot of criticism because I didn't like the type of players he was signing for Villa. Having said that, for Ipswich, where there are totally limited funds, picking out guys like Matt Lowton or Ashley Westwood from League One, yeah, that's very respectable, and that's the kind of thing he needs to be doing over there, and that could work really well for them. Yeah. I don't know how we ended up on that tangent, but there you go.
Not really a tangent. I think it's quite natural. I did some work. I've been doing some work over the last few weeks, mate. Have you ever heard about a bloke called Tommy Ball?
Okay, yeah. So this is a fantastic project. Let me just say that because I wasn't involved with this, but James was. And I just want to say that, I mean, it wasn't just James, by the way, it was Dan Rollinson as well, I believe, from the Villa View, and a couple of other people as well. I'm sure James will name them. They put up a fantastic documentary, as I'm sure he'll tell you about, and I think every single one of you needs to check it out. I watched it today, James.
Yeah, what do you think?
But yeah, well, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was magnificent. I thought he told the story of Tommy Ball very well. But I'm sure you can explain who Tommy Ball was. Was it for a little bit, I mean, with a little bit more detail?
Yeah, so Tommy Ball was a former Villa player, very much in the mould of Jack Grealish. And Jack Grealish, they didn't play the same position, but the haircut, the low socks, almost the attitude, a young player coming through. He was shot dead whilst he was a Villa player. After a game had happened, he'd come home and had an argument with his landlord. You'll find out more in the documentary. And he was shot dead, and he is buried in Perry Bar. So you can, if you're in the area, you can actually go and visit his grave. It's in a state of disrepair. I think I'm on the Villa View tomorrow to talk about that, actually. And it's always a story that's been close to me because it was one of the first horror stories I really remember ever hearing. And, you know, it's not, you know, you grow up in 2018, it's not that scary. But when I was a kid living in that area and you're walking past it at night and, you know, my dad would tell me the story, it did used to kind of horrify me and scare me a lot. And it's so mundane and such like a child-friendly story almost, I guess. But it's one of the only horror stories, in a way, that I'd associate with English football, especially Aston Villa. And it's also a story that not many people know about. And again, I'll speak more about this tomorrow when I'm sitting down with Dan, who did all the work, to be honest. I brought the idea to him. I directed him throughout the day. I produced and, I guess, managed the production of it. But he did all the legwork, groundwork, writing everything. You know, he didn't let me in almost because he was just nailing everything. There's no room for me to step in and go, this is wrong. I made suggestions and I helped him edit stuff. I was expecting, oh, the sound's going to be crap because Dan doesn't do sound. Oh, the writing's going to be crap because he don't write. He nailed it completely.
Oh, no, he does a lot of experimental work, to be fair. When I say experimental, I mean he does it absolutely.
He just pushes the boat.
What he's doing.
Pushes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a shame. I think one of the greatest shames of it all is there was no investment in it, and it's not like we saw any. It's just that was made for about £4.
Yeah, but that's not a shame at all, mate.
No, that's not a shame. It's just if we had the budget and if we was doing this full time, I just think it could have been so much better. And I think we've put that out there. I'm really proud. Don't get me wrong. I'm super proud of it. I just think there is now should be a push that we can do better, get some funding and nail some stories. Don't get me wrong. I think we've done a 10 out of 10 job with that. I'm going to fucking blow my own trumpet here, mate. I just think so many times people are, we do that for, that's done for free. You know what I mean? That shouldn't be done for free.
Of course.
I think the talents are, Dan shouldn't be doing that for free. He shouldn't be sitting down after doing his freelance work or the Villa View's main work or selling mugs and stuff, you know, raising money and doing that in his spare time. He should be paid for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that. And but you know what? The thing is for all of you, that is now, you know, that is a tangible piece of work that you have created. And you know what? Everybody, I think any of you guys, you're going to go far in your own career paths. But, you know, whenever you do look back, you know, that is always going to be as much a part of your portfolio as anything you ever create. And that is there now. It exists. And, you know, you're telling the story of obviously a very, you know, a very influential person of his time that perhaps, you know, isn't well known enough now. And you've basically brought that story to life. And just because, you know, you've done the 8 minutes there now doesn't mean, you know, you can't explore that deeper and further in the future. And if anybody tells it, it's you guys.
Well, here's the thing. The story of Tommy Ball at the Villa View and at 7500 to Holt is over. That is completely over. What will now happen? My hope for this story is that people with skills of going through archives, people with historical skills, people with audio skills will dig on this story and won't let it die, like, because not everyone's going to see it on the Villa View. I think this story deserves to be covered in podcasts. I think it deserves to be covered in articles. And I think people should keep repeating and reporting on this story until the end of time. I think there's plenty of people can have that. There's stuff we brought up in that I think can spin off the war stuff. You know, did the person, the bloke who murdered Tommy Ball, did he come back from the war damaged? Stuff like that. There's so much you can do with that. I think it deserves more. I think there's a lot of digging people can do on it. I hope they can find the information. Some of it won't be on the internet. We used the internet for most of this, mate. We spoke to Rob Bishop and Matt Kendrick. There's no primary sources. They're all dead. You know, it's a long time ago. Unfortunately.
Yeah, where you'll find stuff, and obviously you guys will know this more than me, but, you know, I mean, I love history. I studied it, right? And, you know, even digging for stuff then is incredibly hard, even when you've got journals and journals and journals. This is almost going to need, I mean, there's archivists, isn't there? There's people in charge of the archives at Villa, but then, you know, you might also need to go to the archives at, you know, any of the newspapers which you know, were around back then as well. And I think it's interesting. But you're right. Where do you find the primary sources? Where do you find that link to the past? Because that's what you need now almost.
I think we've done our part, and I think if people want to report on that story, it's there. You do that. We raise, you know, information about that. We raise the news about this. I hope no one's put off reporting on the story or doing anything just because it's out there now. It's always been out there.
Yeah, of course.
Villaview, me weren't the first to discover this story. Been reported in newspapers for ages. 7500 Matt Ferencik wrote an article on it on Tommy Ball's murder about 3 or 4 years ago. It's not news. People know about this.
No, but it's about telling a story, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think that there's more to be told. And I think people who, not necessarily more talented, but with different skills, it's there for them to do. You know, it's not the Villaview story. It's not our story. It's Tommy Ball's story. And I think people can go out and cover that to great success, mate. And I really hope they do.
Well, all I can say is well done to you guys. I thought you executed it perfectly. And it definitely got me interested and definitely makes me want to find out more. And I think for anybody who is listening and hasn't checked it out, please do check it out. Like I wasn't involved with this at all, but I am a lot more, I mean, I'm very invested in the story having watched it. So this isn't me begging for views or anything. Like this is all James and Dan and the guys over at the Villaview. I definitely suggest supporting them as Villa fans and checking out the story.
Yeah, and what's more, I thought Dan Bardell's voice on it really worked well. I was a bit apprehensive about, I don't want to say an amateur because amateur sounds always bad, but like he wasn't a professional voiceover.
Oh, he was, you know, he was what I mean? Great at voiceover.
He was fantastic on that. And plaudits to him, mate, for nailing that. I thought he did a really good job. And I couldn't have asked for any more. And I think he killed it. You know, I say amateur, it sounds so bad, but, you know, there are professional voice actors over there who could have done a job on it, and I think he did really well. And I cannot wait to work with him on more stuff and bring it over, because it's not just them, it's my stuff as well. And it's here, and it's everyone's, you know, anyone can go up on YouTube and watch this, and it's theirs, they can comment on it. It's like a community story. And I am so glad that we are making this stuff and crossing over. And we're going to make more. A lot more. It's not always, you know, there aren't stories as dark as Tommy Ball's. A lot of it's going to be, I guess, I wouldn't say mundane. It's going to be stuff we kind of know.
There's so many stories to tell, isn't there? I mean, you know, there's
so many, in everything, there's so many stories. And just putting them out there, I mean, we'd have all heard certain stories, but not everyone has. Like Tommy Ball, I assumed everyone knew. I thought everyone knew that story, but they don't. And, you know, you can't take that for granted. So more to come from us, mate, and more to come from everyone. I guess more to come from you as well. We've all got stuff brewing.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely, man. I think just, you know, check out, you know, keep on our pages to see if anything's up. But I think it's great some of the work that Villa fans are doing right now. I'm incredibly proud of our community. Absolutely,
I'm thrilled.
You know, there's just so many different content creators out there right now. But, you know, I think it's just great to keep supporting each other. You know what, like the Villaview, for example, James, like yeah. Them as a channel have grown immensely, and they've just done an amazing job. And it's great to see that guys like Dan are still experimenting and trying to bring something new, because, you know, I think Villa fans, Villa in general, like the various different medias and the various different podcasts that have created, it could have been so easy to go down that Arsenal fan TV route, and our fans haven't.
Yeah, I think a lot of people take stuff like the Villa View for granted, and this isn't me just typing on because, you know, they let me help them.
There are others, 100%.
There are others, and people think the Villa View, it's always positive, it's the biggest one. It isn't the biggest one. You know, it isn't the biggest Villa channel. There are plenty of others who have more respected voices, and I think people take that for granted, that the Villa View is still, you know, backing the voice of other Villa fans who might not have their voices heard, and, you know, they aren't necessarily in bed with the club. People take this stuff for granted. They really do. And, you know, if it's lost because they aren't making any money or they don't have the passion for it, or if we lose our passion for Villa, I think the world would be... it wouldn't be as great. And I think I'm really enjoying the world of Aston Villa. It's not just the win, it's the people you meet, like you, like meeting Stevie, formerly of the Villa Review. Meeting Dan and Dan, you know, Rollinson, Bardar, Matt Lynch, yourself, you know, all the people you've met over time and the people you're yet to meet. I think, you know, ignore the football, mate. There's the people you meet, all sorts. And like Dave Farris, who I've met over the past few days, I feel like he's one of my, you know, closer friend. And I've only known him 2 days, mate. You know what I mean? It's like when I met you. We've only done a podcast together, and it's like I feel like you guys, I've got some close friends from Aston Villa, and that's so cool. And like, you don't forget that, you know, the results are temporary, and you make all these mates and say all these things on Twitter and, or whatever, and you make this content, and you think, is it going anywhere? And yeah, it is, it's making you friends. So, you know, wow, couldn't ask for any more than that, really, from a football club, simple little football club in Birmingham.
No, I agree, mate, absolutely agree.
We've run out of football to speak about. There's not enough going on, is there?
No, but I think that the next game that we have is Birmingham City. So, I mean, we're going to have to wait for that. Yeah, you guys are genuinely going to have to wait for a podcast to talk about City.
Yeah, it's too soon. I mean, we've got a week. We don't know who's going to get their leg broken on the international duty.
The 25th?
24th, 25th. It's on that weekend. So, it's on a Sunday. So, we'll probably record after. Directly after the game, almost.
Yeah, probably.
More than likely, but yeah, keep an eye out for that one. Anything you've got left to say, mate?
No, you know what? On the topic of Villa and history, right? One thing I found interesting was my next door neighbour, one of my neighbours back in Birmingham, found a cap at a car boot sale. So what he does is he does a lot of like fixing and mending and stuff. You know, a lot of trading on the car boot circuit. And he showed me this cap he found. And it was dated, and I can't remember the dates of it or the years on it. I'd have to find out, you know, at some point in the 1890s and 1900s. And it had two dates sort of like next to each other. So sort of, say, for example, 1895 till 02 or whatever, right? And I was thinking to myself, I think this is a player's cap. And it's absolutely amazing, some of the history that is just like lying around and we don't know about. It's like... I just, you know, on that topic of history, like, is there a Villa Museum anywhere, or do you reckon there ever will be one that exists?
Well, there's obviously stuff at Villa Park. And there's also a few bits and bobs at the Birmingham Art Gallery and Museum. But in terms of an actual Villa Museum, I think your best bet's the stadium itself, Villa Park. That's it. Yeah. But yeah, I think we'll discover new stuff and we'll all be creating. This is a creation itself. We're also creating new friendships. As I've said, the amount of people I've met this weekend for the first time. Some I've never interacted with on Twitter. Some I've probably told to like F off on Twitter, to be honest. Meeting them in real life, it's always better though.
Do you know what? Everybody on Twitter who's a Villa fan, just say hi to each other, like each other's tweets, support each other. I think James feels a little bit loved up today.
No, I do. Genuinely. honestly. You don't really think about it, but like my family are all Villa fans. You know, there's so much love around Aston Villa. Seriously. They make friends just because of Villa. It's like mad. Mad to think about that. But, you know, like Dan and Dan, Villa View, all that stuff, it just comes out of one football club.
Well, you know what? For a lot of us... For a lot of us, I think for most of us, Villa is a big part of our lives. So that's why times like you know, relegation and some of the years that we've had, you know, recently have been so hard on us. And I think that's why you know, things do get a little bit heated, and I think that's why they affect our moods so much. That's why, you know, guys like me and you go on long rants on Twitter during games. It is a big part of our lives, and football does affect our moods. I think it's always important to remember that, but it's good to see the positives that come out of being a football fan outside of the pitch.
Yeah, you know, couldn't sign off on a better note, mate. So thank you to everyone who's been listening. I know Dave, who I met, of course, is a listener to the podcast, so hope to meet many more of you in future. If you're anything like Dave, I hope so. Bloody hell. We'll be mates forever. And of course, yourself, Danny. It's all good. It's all good with Villa. I really appreciate this football club, mate. Really good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if they're winning. Fucking hell. It's all right if they're losing. And you're like, oh, yeah, I made a few friends. But if they're winning, yeah, bonus.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Hopefully that continues as well. But whilst it doesn't, I'll just whack open FIFA 98 on my SNES and win some games.
You're not still playing now. You're getting an Xbox One.
I don't have FIFA 19, so I can't pretend that we're Champions League winners at this point.
A quick hot take before we end is the SNES is just a bad games console, mate.
It's not a bad games console at all.
Dude, the games are bad.
When you compare it to the Sega Mega Drive, which has, you know, to be fair to it, has like Sonic the Hedgehog on it, SNES isn't that bad. You know, you've got Mario on it.
I think most games consoles before the PlayStation 1 were pretty bad. I think we are nostalgia blinds people. The games are bad. They made you run around collecting beans for 4 hours.
I wonder.
That's not fun.
I wonder what the IMDb report would have been on Home Alone 2, the video game.
Home Alone 2's video game is so bad.
I've been playing that.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, anyone who says the best consoles were before PlayStation 1 is lying.
Have you played Home Improvement, the video game?
No, but Home Alone 2 is so... It just make you run around collecting coins.
Oh yeah, and you gotta watch out for the vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, it's so stupid. Like I think most games, I can happily say that we look back far too fondly on most video games with nostalgia. Like the Crash Bandicoot remakes were so bad.
No.
Infuriating.
What do you mean? What do you mean the remakes? Like, because the actual Crash...
They were great games, but I think we look back on the original Crash Bandicoot games with too much nostalgia because they were terrifyingly difficult.
Oh, yeah. No, they were difficult for sure, but I've been playing Crash Bandicoot 3 recently, and it's a great game. It is a great game. Absolutely great.
Yeah, we look far too fondly on them SNES and NES games with nostalgia, because I think there was only about 4 good games, and they were all made by Nintendo.
Do you know what a great FIFA was as well? FIFA 06. I mean, that's a little bit fast-forwarded, but like that was the game where you could shoot from about 50 yards and it would feel beautiful when it got in.
I'm just going to leave you with that one there, mate. I've got nothing to add.
Just absolutely blasting in like half volleys from Gavin McCann. From the halfway line. That was the era.
Gavin McCann had the exact physique of a postman as well in those games.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate. Thanks very much for listening today, guys. We'll be back soon. Before the Birmingham match, to preview it. Pointless really wrapping up an international break. I'm not really into him. Villa on at the top level. Yeah.
Who's in action? John McGinn?
Glenn Whelan is captaining the Republic of Ireland.
Yep, 85th cap.
For the final time. That's his last game, I believe.
Yep, 85th cap. Yep.
Against Northern Ireland. I believe John McGinn will be in action. Bjarnason, of course. Chester, Taylor. And that's about it, almost.
Just a quick note. Isn't it crazy?
And Ireland.
Oh, yeah, Ireland, of course. Al Mohammadi probably as well. I was saying, like, isn't it crazy how the Republic of Ireland could field an all Villa midfield?
They could go a long way to having most of a team, and especially if we're talking about former players as well.
Yeah, true.
Could go a long way to having a full Villa team. But yeah, mate, and managers Roy Keane, Martin O'Neill, go a long way to former Villa personnel.
That's crazy that Martin O'Neill is still managing Kieran Clarke in 2018.
But yeah, mate, I've enjoyed today, really have, and I'm sure we'll have more good episodes in the future. We'll catch up next week after Birmingham. I'm really happy with Villa. Win against Derby, hopefully a big win in the Derby when we come back. So where can people find you, mate?
It's at Raza Journo. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's changed. I was about to say at the actual
Raza Journo. I do want to get it back. I am working to get it back, but it's fine. It's fine. This is chill.
Am I allowed to say it on the podcast? Because I know I wasn't.
Yeah, it's fine.
Are you sure? So you can find him at Raza Journo. You can find me unbanned at Gemma Russian. You can find us together at 7500 Holt, and be sure to say hi. So
I just want to clarify before we go. I did not get banned for abusive remarks or anything. I got banned for false copyright. So that's
which is a worse crime in Theresa May's Britain, I believe.
I'm not making a comment there, James.
All right. Well, we'll catch you next week, guys. Goodbye.